Okay, I'm good. Good evening. Hi, it's really nice to be back. So you want to hear a funny story?
Sure.
Okay, check this out. We went down for Drop the Rock, and it was very moving and very emotional. And since we'll have more people in the room tomorrow night, we'll go ahead and share the experience, strength, and hope on that tomorrow night. Tomorrow morning. So I think I'm done. It's 5:30, right? So Julie drops me off at my cab, and she goes, I'll pick you up in 15, 20 minutes. You can snag a little dinner with us. I go, oh, it'd be great, and I'll get into bed early, and be really nice. So I'm sitting at their cabin, and we have homemade roasted chicken that I didn't have to cook, salad, another salad, just nice, fresh food, and company's great, and I'm relaxed. You know, I flew all the way in from California, been up at 3 a.m. on Friday morning, right? I mean, I just was up, went to bed late last night, takes me a while to unwind, get up early this morning, two and a half hours before I present, and I'm working all day. And my schedule is not what you guys have posted. So the proposed retreat agenda that I submitted is not what they have. So today, you guys thought I would stop at 11:30. I'm thinking I'm stopping at 12 noon. So you know what? Today, I think I'm stopping at 4 o'clock. And they go, no, can you go to 5? And I go, well, yeah, whatever. So, we do the Drop the Rock thing, and we go to 5:30, and I'm having this great dinner. We're laughing, I'm talking, telling all these stories. And then Julie goes, well, look, we got to go. I got to get Sherry back. And I'm like, gee, they're kind of kicking me out of here kind of early. I didn't think I was that out of company. And I thought, well, maybe she means Kay, because they're going to do karaoke. And they're all looking at me, because I'm not getting up. And I'm like, they really want me to eat Dine and Dash or something. So I'm like, well, and they go, come on. And I go, where? I go, I'm going to bed. And they all stare at me like, what? And I go, where are you going? And they go, you got to speak at 7. I go, who? And they go, you. I go, not me. I go, I'm done. And they go, no. I go, are you kidding, right? She goes, no. I go, that's why you don't want to hear anything else from me. Like, come on. I'm waiting for
thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm waiting, literally, for Val, five, or I don't know how many, how many were in the cabin, how many were there? I'm waiting for them to tell me it's a joke. And they're like, come on. And I go, I already did. What are you talking about? So I go, okay, run me back to my cabin, because this is life on life's terms, right? So here I am. I have nothing to present. But you know what? This is what I do. So it's very easy for me to talk. So I want to ask you a couple of questions. Or maybe I just want to talk. I do want to take a group conscience. Would you like to hear the irritated and bitterly disappointed story? Or would you like to do some group sharing? How many want to hear more from me, bitterly disappointed, irritated, or group sharing? Oh, God, I am so humbled. Thank you. Jeez. All right, God. Okay. All right. Okay, I need a volunteer to read. Okay. Okay, and please be very delicate. Look how my poor little book, so you have to hold it very... Okay, I want you to introduce yourself, and then I want you to read. This is page 36, and I call this the irritated story, and you start here, and I'll tell you when to stop.
Big book.
Big book. Big book, page 36.
My name is Sarah, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater.
I'm a compulsive overeater.
This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. If I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my past friends for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place. They have a bar. I had no intention of binging. I just thought I would have a salad. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the month I was absent. sat down at the table and ordered a salad and a glass of milk. Still no thought of binging. I ordered another, more dressing, and decided to have another glass of milk. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an order of an appetizer with my milk, it could be on the clinic. I ordered an appetizer and drank the milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured that I was taking the appetizer on the clinic. The experiment went so well that I ordered another appetizer with pie and poured it into more milk, or drink it with milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. Then started one more journey to the side of the gym. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic. Yet, all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, this is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon its consequences. But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning. There could inevitably run some insanely trivial excuse for taking that first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we could ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how could it have happened?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You can just stay here.
Okay,
so isn't this interesting? I came to work on Tuesday. What happened to Monday? I remember I felt irritated he was irritated, right? And what proceeded to happen to him after he was irritated? What happened? Then what happened? He got drunk. He went out. Okay? I want you to remember that. Now she's going to read another little story to you. This is page 154 from the Big Book, and I call it Bitterly Discouraged. So we're looking at irritated and bitterly discouraged.
Is it proceeding?
Bitterly.
Bitterly. Okay. I'm Sarah. I'm still compulsive.
We still know that.
Sorry. Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange place, discredited and almost broke. Still physically weak and sober but a few months, he saw that his predicament was dangerous. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but who? One dismal afternoon, he paced the lobby wondering about how his bill was to be paid. At one end of the room stood a glass covered directory of local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened into an attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. In there, he would find companionship and release. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an acquaintance and would have a lonely weekend. Of course he couldn't drink, but why not sit hopefully at the table a bottle of ginger ale before him? After all, had he not been sober 6 months now? Perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks, no more. Fear gripped him. He was on thin ice. Again, it was the old insidious insanity, that first drink. With a shiver, he turned away and walked down the lobby to the church directory. Music and gay chatter still floated to him from the bar. But what about his responsibilities, his family, and then all the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? Ah, yes, those other alcoholics. There must be many in such this town. He would phone a clergyman. His sanity returned and he thanked God. Selecting a church at random from the directory, he stepped into a booth and lifted the receiver. He called to the clergyman and led him presently to a certain... His call to the clergyman led him presently to a certain resident of the town who, though formerly able and respected, was then nearing the nadir of alcoholic despair. It was the usual situation. Home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damage. He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of his somewhat abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be an alcoholic.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You.
Okay. So now we've heard what I call the irritated story, the suddenly story, the whiskey with milk story. Pretty familiar with that, right? And now we heard bitterly discouraged. Are you just familiar with that one? Okay. What's the difference? And I just want to have some free flow discussion from you guys. What's the difference? What the guy that was bitterly discouraged, do you know who that was? That was Bill. Okay. And if you're new in program, that was a founder. That was Bill Wilson. Okay. So he was bitterly discouraged. What happened to him?
He went and helped someone.
And then what was the byproduct of that? My recovery, your recovery. He helped millions and millions of people become. He had a choice. He was bitterly discouraged. He had a choice, and he rechose. All right, and so I want to share with you, I'm going to segue off this topic a little bit, because a lot of times, I can get all over the map with this because I have so much passion about this story, but to segue, let me just get off topic. This is the book called Alcoholics Comes of Age. Is anybody familiar with this? Okay. Remember when they talked about the church directory? He's in a hotel lobby. He hears the gay conviviality. He thinks if he doesn't go in there, he's going to have a lonely weekend ahead. So he's got the choice. The gay conviviality of the crowd. God, that so much looks and sounds so much better. And here is the hotel here. And here's the hotel directory. Have you all seen this picture? Okay. It's a powerful, I'm going to read to you what it says right here. It says, historic decision for AA's future was made at this spot in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel in Akron. Here, one co-founder turned away from the first drink to make a phone call that led to the other co-founder and to the chain of recovery that now extends around the world and to this room today. He made a choice. He made a choice. He only could get through that because he was connected to what? His higher power. Okay? Remember that he was bitterly discouraged. The disease center's where? Okay? He had to fight it in his mind because he knew the opponent in the bar, he might not come out. But he knew if he could carry the message to somebody else, that if he took one step towards God, God would take 10 on his behalf. Every day is a choice. Every day is a choice. So that's irritated or bitterly discouraged. Do you think that most of us, if we're bitterly discouraged, know to cry out for help? Do we know that? Think about it. Think about it. Go slow. If you're irritated, do you cry out for help? If you're bitterly discouraged, do you cry out for help? Damn straight, we get help. If we're really upset, we'll let somebody in. If we're bitterly discouraged, don't you agree that we let people in? True or true? Come on. What is it? If you're upset, are you going to let people know? Really upset. You just got diagnosed with the worst thing you could imagine in your life. You going to tell people?
Yeah.
The worst thing that just happened in your life. You lost your job. Somebody stole your identity, took all your money. You're bitterly discouraged and upset. Are you going to tell somebody about it?
If I don't, I'll eat. Damn well.
Okay? When we're really broken down, we're going to tell somebody. It's a given. Here's the part we don't pay attention to. I'm irritated. That's stupid. I'm irritated. If you learn to treat irritations like bitterly discouraged, you will not have to cash in your chips of abstinence and you can obtain and maintain a healthy body weight for life, i.e. have peace of mind, because you will have the power to choose back by learning to feel your feelings. And so this is what I do. Look at this. I have one of these in my room, but I put this in my suitcase to bring all the way from California. This is a fly swatter. And I want to show you what I do when I'm irritated. Stop it. I don't let those flies, if I let one fly land on me, an irritated thought, a depressing thought, a scary thought, if I don't shut it down in my mind right now, I could lose. I could lose. Because it's proven to me that when you're irritated, we eat. When we're bitterly discouraged, we cry. We get help. We run to a meeting. Do you agree with this or not? Okay, so watch out. Get yourself a fly swatter. And when you feel irritated, uptight, just go, stop it. What? Don't let that land on you. You, like a fly, you don't just go, oh, I'm not going to pretend the fly is here. I'm not going to pretend. Pretty soon you got, you know, swarm running around in your face. Don't allow the first one. Shut it down. Take your power back. Because pretty soon you'll be going like this with your hand and they will be like a swarm. They'll just follow you around. But if you kill the first thought, you're not going to get a second one. So you must pay attention to being irritated. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Can anybody tell me a personal story when they didn't take care of such a small feeling and it grew and it grew and it grew? Talk loud, because I'm mic'd. Hey, Cecilia.
Are you bringing your chest to me?
I am. It's called the rock and rack.
I'll wait on the rock and rack.
Okay.
I have an employee who's always late. And so I wait and I wait and wait. I'm not sure what I'm waiting for because he's not going to stop being late. So instead of dealing with him, I get irritated because now I have to set a boundary. And if the stopping the thought is to just set the damn boundary and move on.
Okay.
And so I've done that.
Okay, great. So can everybody relate to that? Do you think that that was harder to deal with for 6 months, on and on and on and on, than some huge, you know, collision that happened in her life? Right? Okay, what did you say to him?
I said, you've been calling in late, you need to stop that, it's unacceptable.
Okay.
And that was it. It was
okay. And you know what, I don't like the word set a boundary. It's so like psychobabble. It's speak your truth. Give honor to yourself. I don't like it. You're coming in here late. It's disrespectful to me. It's disrespectful to you. It's disrespectful to your coworkers. I want you here at 8 o'clock. Feels good to speak your truth. And you know what? People like it when you're truthful. I've been nothing but totally truthful with you today. People like it. Because you know what? People don't hear it. So don't worry about setting a boundary. Go, what's my truth? What's my intention? This thing, it's irritating the crap out of me. Get away. It's like, well, what is it? What's bugging me? What's niggling at you? Because if you allow it to niggle at you, it will eventually make you kind of nudgy, and you won't be able to feel that nudge from God to move forward. Does that make sense? Who else has a personal story like that? You guys make me work tonight, so I'm making you work tonight. Aha! Got my fluff water. Okay. Come on. Who's had something small in their life and you've allowed it to erode your peace of mind?
All right. I was treated horribly disrespectfully by a fellow employee Thursday. And it happened at 9:30, and at 3:30 I was still burning.
6 hours of her life.
That I can't ever get back. I didn't have a fly swatter.
What happened?
I screwed my whole afternoon. I got literally nothing done between 9:30 and 3:30.
What happened to her?
Not a damn thing. She hung up pissed because I wouldn't do what she wanted.
Okay. If you had to do it over, if you got a do-over, what would you do?
Sorry, I can't do that. Anything else I can help you with? Move on.
Okay.
Sorry to feel that way. This is our policy. A manager will be happy to call you back and discuss it with you.
Okay. And we don't say we're sorry anymore. We say what?
I regret that you feel that way.
Takes her power back, speaks her truth. Okay. Do not allow anyone to rob you of your time, your peace, your serenity. Your time, your peace, your serenity is your responsibility. Remember, when mama's happy, make yourself happy. It's your responsibility. Don't count on your own best friend not to disappoint you. You don't disappoint you. You don't abandon you. You don't counsel yourself out. Make sense? Questions? No questions. Okay. Where's my glasses? All right. I want to read something to you. Because we can be so judgmental about our lives and others. And this is called We'll See. And I was going to ask Julie to read. And Julie left. You were going to read. We're very casual tonight. We're very, very casual.
Horace Wilsey, author unknown. Once upon a time, there was a farmer in the central region of China. He didn't have a lot of money, and instead of a tractor, he used an old horse to plow his field. One afternoon, while working in the field, the horse dropped dead. Everyone in the village said, "Oh, what a horrible thing to happen." The farmer said simply, "We'll see." He was so at peace and so calm that everyone in the village got together and, admiring his attitude, gave him new horses to give. Everyone's reaction now was, "What a lucky thing," and the farmer said, "We'll see." A couple days later, a new horse jumped the fence and ran away. Everyone in the village shook their heads and said, "What a poor fellow." The farmer smiled and said, "We'll see." Eventually, the horse found its way home, and everyone again said, "What a fortunate man." The farmer said, "We'll see." Later in the year, the farmer's young boy went out riding a horse and fell and broke his leg. Everyone in the village said, "What a shame for the poor boy." And the farmer said, "We'll see." 2 days later, the army came into the village to draft new recruits. When they saw the farmer's son had a broken leg, they decided not to recruit him. Everyone said, "What a fortunate young man." The farmer smiled again and said, "We'll see." Moral of the story, there's no use in overreacting to the events and circumstances of our everyday lives. Many times, what looks like a setback may actually be a gift in disguise. And when our hearts are in the right place, all events and circumstances are gifts that we can learn valuable lessons from. As Fra Giovanni once said, "Everything we call a trial, a sorrow, or a duty, believe me, the gift is there and the wonder of an overshadowing presence."
Thank you. I just want to share with you a couple of my favorite sayings. The eagle has built a shabby and unsheltering home for you because it cannot build otherwise. Do not try to make this impoverished house stand. Its weakness is your strength. God is as incapable of creating the perishable as the ego is as of making the eternal. Choose wisely. If it feels good, it's God calling you. If it feels bad, it's your ego, your addiction, your child with your soul tears. I can't even read my own writing. We'll let that go. Whatever I fight weakens me. Whatever I cooperate with strengthens me. Once that I surrender, that's the beginning of healing, right? Once I surrendered that I was truly a compulsive overeater, the healing came easily and effortlessly. I had to work for it. I had to harvest it every single day. When I was diagnosed with cancer, once I surrendered to it, acted as if I had chosen, my journey came easily and effortlessly, though I had to work to keep that vision every single day. Food gives us a false feeling of being grounded versus being grounded in a power greater than ourselves. So remember, if you're going to serve food, if that's going to be your higher power, you might as well bow down before it before you eat it. And if you really think that it has power to create life and to breathe you, then make it your higher power. But if it doesn't, turn away from it. Turn away from it in the moment, in the thought, in your mind. Don't let it get more than an irritation. Don't make a plan and pray that your plan will work. Pray that God's plan, pray for God's plan, and it will always work. Prayer opens the door for God to work. Destiny is not a matter of chance. It's a matter of choice. It is not a thing to be waited for. It's a thing to be achieved. Leave room for divine inspiration. Be obedient to the Spirit of God. It's not the 100th bite that makes you fat. It's the first. In the confrontation between the stream and the rock, the stream always wins, not through strength, but by perseverance. This moment, this step is primary. The destination is secondary. Just some things I wanted you to remember. And here's a couple of last ones. All real pleasure comes from doing God's will. This is because not doing it is a denial of the self. Makes sense, huh? This is called the perfect you. Again, nothing you do or think or wish is necessary to establish your worth. A lot of us on the dock today experienced that with dropping the rock. You are a child of God. You were created in a blinding flash of creativity, a primal thought when God extended himself in love. Everything you've added on since is useless. When Michelangelo was asked how he created a piece of sculpture, he answered that the statue already existed within the marble. God himself had created the Pieta, the David, the Moses. Michelangelo's job, as he saw it, was to get rid of the excess marble that surrounded God's creation. So it is with you. The perfect you isn't something you need to create because God already created it. The perfect you is the love within you. Your job is to allow the Holy Spirit to remove the fearful thinking that surrounds your perfect self, just as excess marble surrounds Michelangelo's perfect statue. Isn't that beautiful? Okay. The perfect us has always existed, but somewhere down the line, it was trained out of us to trust, to really, really trust, to really, really trust that light within inside of us. So, you know, when I get ready to go on these ABCs retreats, I always just go, what am I doing? Who am I? I'm just another fat chick in disguise. Okay? And I just go, God, you know what? Just come to me and through me. Just help me to help your people. Let me bring to your people what you want to be told. And I have to trust, because it's very, can you imagine how scary it is leaving my little home in Studio City, California, coming all the way out to Omaha to people I have never met before, thinking, oh my God, they'll probably think I'm an L.A. kook. Okay? And it's like, just trust. So I trust the God in me that wants to connect to the God in you. And I really feel that God has made this weekend totally perfect and totally possible. And it's amazing that I have had to stand on my feet for literally 2 days. Because I'm mic'd this way, I have to lean into people. Usually when I have somebody ready to sit down, I can take like a little 60-minute break. I'm not tired. Here I am, I don't even know, what is it, 8 o'clock at night? And you guys are wanting me to talk? This is crazy. 8:15? This is the most funniest thing that ever happened to me. I mean, you know. So it's like, it's very important to remain... Keep room in your life to be flexible for God's plan. Because when you get up in the morning, it's like, we always make a plan, right? I'm going to do, I'm going to be, I got to get, and I got to have, and I yada, yada, yada. But if you don't leave enough flexibility in there to be flexible and flowing, it will break you. You're either going to break down in this program, or you're going to break down and break through. A lot of people break down and don't get going. Okay, but now, hopefully you're breaking down and you're breaking through and coming to become more of you. That's what this is all about. So I'm going to go ahead and take some questions here from the Ask It Basket, unless there's a certain topic somebody wants me to highlight on. Anybody got any, want to speak up? Anybody? You are just too nice. What do you do if your husband likes, wants to eat your binge foods, and expects you to cook them? Okay? All right. Let me give you a quote. Let's see if I can do this real quick here. Oh, if I can find this quickly. Too bad we're being taped, because this is on tape. Oh well. Stop talking back then. Okay. Can't find this. Okay. Anyhow. This book promises recovery. It says an alcoholic can go anywhere that alcohol is served. provided that his intentions are right. I apologize for not being able to find the page for that. So I can go anywhere where my binge foods are served if I'm set with God, right? So guess what? Do I eat pie?
No.
Do you think I'd make the best pecan pie my husband has ever had? Absolutely. Because it's an act of love for him. Okay? I learned how to make pecan pie in New Orleans. And let me tell you something, that is the best pecan pie, and I can guarantee a good 50 pounds. My weight came from New Orleans. So you know what? So if he wants me to make him a binge food, I'll make it. I'm not afraid of food, because I'm centered in God. Do you think in the early days I even allowed anything like that in my house?
No.
Okay, but I'm all grown up now, so I can do it, right? Okay, but remember, consciously competent or unconsciously competent? So it's like I still know that when I'm baking a pie, I'm really alert because I don't want to like stir and like lick a spoon or do something. I am aware. Do you think I make brownies for him? Absolutely. He loves my brownies. I don't eat it. Used to binge on the whole thing. Okay? So it's like, it's easy for me to do. Well, we're talking 20 years down the road. Okay? If you're new, do not attempt it. You might get in the boxing ring with Mike Tyson. Might lose an ear. Is he the guy that bites ears?
Okay.
Orlando Holyfield did? Damn. Okay, so it's like, know who your opponent is. If you're ready, if Mike Tyson is ready to get in the ring with Holyfield, then like go make a fight. But I'm not going to go get in the ring with Mike Tyson by my ear off. Okay, I know what I can win at and I know what I'm powerless against, okay? So it's like you have to know where you're at. What does your daily meditation routine look like? What is your favorite step? My daily meditation, I think we talked a little bit about meditation. I think we talked about that. People want more clarity on meditation? I think we've pretty much covered that. My favorite step, 12 steps. It'd be like saying, Sherry, what's your favorite part of a cake? The raw egg? The bittersweet chocolate or unsweetened chocolate. I don't even know what to put in cakes anymore. You know, flour, dry flour, flour. It's like, no, man. If in order to have the whole cake, you got to put all the ingredients in there, right? If you just put some egg in there and you put some sugar, it's not a cake. So my favorite step, the 12 steps. Seriously. How do you get a babe like you to have a relationship? How do I get a babe like you to have a relationship? That's what you're talking about. Okay. How you do that is you become what that babe wants. Become the light in the world that you're seeking. Become the answer to the world that you're seeking. So in therapy, here's another thing that they taught me in therapy. They said, hey, Sherry, you know what? When you love yourself, then you can love somebody else. What do they say in therapy? When you love yourself, you can love somebody else. What's that statement? Yeah, you can't love somebody else until you love yourself. Right? I still, to this day, I don't walk around going, I love me, I love me, I love me, I love me. Sorry. Okay, this is what you guys taught me. You want love? Go get love. Go give love. You want love? Go give love. When I give love, guess what I get? I get a ton back. Okay? And then, guess what happens? Then I really like me. I really love me. I really care about me. But loving me didn't come before loving you. Okay, so anybody have cats and dogs? Goldfish, hamsters, snakes? Okay, did you love yourself first then your dog loved you? No, man, you poured all your love into that little kitty, that little dog, right? And guess what? You got love back. Okay, so if you want to have the babe, you be the babe. You be the babe. You be what you're trying to attract. You be that. You be love, you be love, you be love, and you will have so much love. You be the light that you want to see in the world. And you thought that was a joke, huh? That was cute. Thanks. What exercises did you do to get rid of your abdominal apron? Sounds like a medical question, huh? Okay, this is what I did. Okay, this is what I did. Okay, my husband, I've known him for 17 years. We've been married for 15 years, and it's a marriage that still continues to grow and flourish. He wouldn't even drop me off at the airport. He had to walk me in. Okay? He will not let me take a taxi. He wants to meet me at the airport, and he won't be doing a drive-by. He will be standing as close to security as they will let him, and then he will scoop me up in his arms. It is a dream come true. I have today the marriage of what I always dreamed marriage would be. I married a really, really wonderful gift from God. I forgot what the question was. What was the question? So check this out. My husband thinks I always look like this. I met my husband when I was 50 pounds heavier. And when I go, Tim, I was 50 pounds heavier, he goes, no, you weren't. And I show him a photograph, and he goes, no. I go, yeah. Because to him, I'm still his blonde bombshell. Just absolutely amazing. So what I did, I was in program. I was 2 years in program when I met my husband. And I guess I'm going to segue around on this. I know this is about the fat apron, but I'm going to tell you about my relationship, so don't let me forget to answer the question about the fat apron. So when I was new in program, I was starting to lose weight, right? I'd lost my first 20 pounds, and I wanted to start dating again, right? And my sponsor says, no dating. And I go, why? And she goes, because the man, she goes, no dating for 6 months. And I go, why? And she goes, because the kind of man that you will attract some 6 months from now will be entirely different than the one that you attract today. And I thought, 6 months, that's okay, I'll live a long time, so whatever. So I was like, okay, so at the end of 6 months, I'm like looking more like this than I did on a size 24, right? So I'm doing one of these with my flicking my hair over my shoulders, and I'm going, okay, now? And she goes, no dating for 6 months. I go, I just did the 6 months. She goes, no dating for an entire year. I go, why? She goes, because the kind of man that you will attract today in a year, in 6 months from now, will be entirely different than the man you will attract today. So I thought, well, you know what? She's been right about everything else. I think I'll just listen to her. It's just 1 year out of my life. I've got 6 months to go. Like who cares, right? Better stay focused, get the rest of the weight off. So anyhow, my life was great. My body was starting to look good. I was feeling confident. I was feeling happy, joyous, and free, and empowered, and bubbling over with self-confidence. Just feeling great. But, you know, I really wanted to meet that guy. And so I thought, you know, my girlfriend and I were talking, and she goes, where's our husbands? And she goes, you know what? They probably got killed in Vietnam. I go, yeah, really, too bad. We'll probably never get married. So we were kind of moping, and I was still dating, but not, you know, just dating and just like can't connect. It's like, you know, dating for me was never a problem, but it was just like finding Mr. Right was like he was never there. So finally I decided to say my surrender prayer, and the surrender prayer is not to be confused with the serenity prayer. And you fill in the blank, and it goes like this. And so I said the surrender prayer for my husband. And I said, God, if you want me to get married, then let me get married. But if you don't want me to get married, then don't let me get married. Place in me your will and give me the power and the courage to carry it out. So that was my prayer. And 2 weeks later, I meet my husband. And I knew the minute I met him, and he did too. And within that first week of dating, he said, let's get married. And I said, okay. But then we thought, no one will take our relationship serious. So we decided not to get married. We said that we would date for 1 year. We would be engaged for 1 year to give the respect to our families and the respect to our relationship. But we were very committed from the minute we met. Okay? And so what he said to me, and I'm going to do this with Barb. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. Your hands are all tucked in here. I'm going to hold. So I'm standing here with him like this. We're talking, right? And I said, what happens when real life sets in? Because now I've been in program, right? I know real life happens. It's not like you get struck then, you fall in love, it stays that way. Real life happens. I go, what happens when real life sets in? And you know what he said to me? He goes, we'll always take care of this. Okay? That, if you allow God to work in your life, that will be your experience. And we have always taken care of this. Those that you were on tape, I just walked over and held someone else's, you know, elbow to elbow, and I made a circular motion between us. Because, and he and I, when our businesses are fun and exciting, it's very easy to go out there, right, and to be out and other-oriented, but we always kept our focus upon one another, and that's why our marriage is still heavily committed today and very much in love and great sex. If that's okay to say from the podium. So, feel very, very blessed. But when I met Tim, he's very good looking. You saw him in the photograph, right? He looked better after I dressed him up. But when I met him, that man could not dress. And, you know, he had this dumb car. And I go, God, you sent me that? That? Come on! Look at his hair! Look at his car! But I had this incredible feeling inside of me that said, Sherry, if you pass on him, you'll regret it the rest of your life. It was such an intense feeling because you guys taught me to become obedient to my intuition, where God talks to me and places my desire. So I listened to that. And I was a bolter. I was a runner. Get out of my way or the highway. We've already heard about how I was, okay? And so what I decided to do, I said, you know what, I'm going to stay for 30 days and date this guy. 30 days, I'll give it 30 days. Because he didn't have a GQ haircut, and he didn't drive a Mercedes. And, you know, he didn't have Armani suit on, right? So I said, I'll stay for 30 days. So I stayed for 30 days, and it got better and better and better and better. And you know what? We did finally end up with the Armani suit, the GQ haircut, and the Mercedes. But you know what? We did it all together. Isn't that nice? Everything that we created together. Okay? So we made our money together. I got this body together. And so we're going back to how I lost my fat apron. I said to Tim, I go, I want to go to the gym, but I'm scared. I'm really scared. It's 50 pounds heavier than I am. And you know what the gyms look like in LA, right? Wouldn't that be a little intimidating for a fat chick? How do you think I felt, right? And I'm like, I want to go. He goes, I'll drive you. Just like the first day of kindergarten. Not that that was my experience in kindergarten. So he takes me to the gym. He drops me off, and he picks me up. And it broke the ice, and I was like, I can do this. I can go to the gym. So the next time, I went to the gym myself. And I went to the gym, and I went to the gym, and as I continued to lose weight, my body just responded. And plus, I didn't lose my weight at 54. I lost my weight at 34. It's a big difference, right? And I do find that women, I don't care if they're 34 and lose their weight and not work out, they really have a problem with loose skin. So if you work out, somehow your body just kind of can respond to that. All right, so I hope that was probably, yes?
Would you repeat the surrender first?
Yes. Everybody ready?
Yes.
Okay. God, if you want me to have blank, then let me have blank. If you don't want me to have blank, then don't let me have blank. But place in me your will and give me the power and the courage to carry it out. So when we bought our house, I wanted to buy this other house a few months before. And it was south of the boulevard, which is some place you want to be in Studio City. And I really wanted that house, and he didn't want that house. And I just prayed, and I said, God, if you want us to do it, let us do it. If you don't want us to do it, don't let us do it, place in me, we'll give him the power and courage to carry it out. And you know what, it just didn't work out. We weren't kind of ready for it yet. He wasn't ready, you know, he didn't really dig that house. So anyhow, I finally surrendered, and I said, God, because we were looking in Sherman Oaks, And I said, God, you know what? I turn it all over to you. Let us buy the house where you want us to buy the house. Let it look like what you want it to be. Let it cost as much as you want it to be. Let it be whatever you want. I take my will entirely out of it. You already know exactly what I want. So you know what? I trust to you. So guess what? Again, within a few weeks, an ad comes out in the paper about this house in Studio City. And one of the guys in Tim's office said, hey, have you guys taken a look at Studio City? And it's like, no, we had never even considered it. So I saw this ad in the paper. We saw this house south of the boulevard. Pool, jacuzzi, pond. Whole back of the house is beautiful windows. Private, like, courtyard type backyard. Beautiful house. High ceilings. Our house, bought it, way better than the first one I picked out. So anything I've ever picked out for myself is never as good as what God picked out for me. And if you get a chance to listen to the 2009 tapes that we did in Bakersfield, the ABCs, you'll hear another girl tell the same story about she had picked a house and God had something much better in mind for her. You got a question?
What does the Sherman Oaks mean?
Sherman Oaks, California is a city.
And I don't know what that means.
It's right next door.
Is it better to live more plus one place than the other?
I love Studio City. I love Studio City. I love Studio City. It's perfect for me. Sherman Oaks is perfect for somebody else. Beverly Hills is more perfect for someone else. Pasadena is better for somebody else. Van Nuys is better for somebody else. Studio City is my town. I love Studio City. It's just a preference. It's just a city. Like you would say Omaha or Lincoln. There's like certain streets here in Omaha. You would live in this neighborhood or that. Like, I want to be in that neighborhood. Does that make sense? Just personal preference. One of the promises is that the problem of these are questions again. One of the promises is that the problem of compulsive eating will be removed. It will not exist for us. Page 55 in the big book. What is your experience with this and the rest of the 10-step promises regarding food? Well, let's just take a look at 10-step promises. Okay. 10-step promises is page 84, not whatever that said. So, page 84, it says, and. Hey, want to read? Who wants to read? Jeff, want to read? Just careful with my book.
And we have I'm Jeff, compulsive overeater. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it.
Okay, condition. Got to keep going.
Down there?
Yeah.
We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
And keep in what? Okay, so it says in the beginning, it says and, okay, because remember in the 9th step promise it says if, we're painstaking, right? So this says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. Okay, so if I walk over here, and I'm, can you guys put your dukes up? And I'm getting in a fight, right? And we're duking it out. And it says, I have ceased fighting anyone, anything, even food. That's a choice I have to make. I'm not going to fight with them anymore. Forget it. Why? It's a losing battle. Okay, that's what I need to do. That's exactly what it says. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. Three things. Anything, anyone, and alcohol. The three A's that is, you know, for us food, okay? So by this time, sanity will have returned. So you'll know when you get in the ring with a serious opponent, do you want to get your ear bitten off? Get out of the what? Get out of the ring. You're going to lose. Cease fighting anything or anyone, even food. Makes sense, right? So I'm going to read the question again. One of the promises is that the problem of compulsive overeating will be removed. It will not exist for us. So if I get out of the ring, does the fight exist?
No.
I have to cease fighting. I have to pretend. I have to stop pretending that I can eat pizza like a lady. Just because you can get in the fight in the ring with, you know, Mike Tyson, and your ear doesn't get bitten off, doesn't mean mine won't. Right? Okay? And so, because people hear kind of what they want to hear. We will seldom be interested in food. Okay? If I'm not in the ring with it, if I'm not paying attention to my opponents over here, I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on, oh, I want to go shopping and buy all that. Okay? I've taken my focus off of that. I've shifted my perception. I'm looking this way. I'm not looking at the temptation. Because where are you the ones to get in there and get in and make it a mess? Put them up, right? It's like, Sherry, stop it. You're not going to win. You're never going to win with a bag of Doritos and bean dip. You're not going to ever win at Taco Bell. Come on. Okay? Then it says, if tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame because we've learned, we've been burned so many times by putting our hand on a stove. How many of you have been burned on your stove? How many of you approach your stove with care? Okay, but somehow with the food, we forget and we keep getting back in the ring. So we have to cease fighting anything or anyone. So I think that's probably enough on that. And I'm going to be wrapping this up pretty soon. So give two or more examples of praying and have God answer in physical form. Okay. Okay, you heard about my story about Turtle Bay, about meeting Linda, right? You heard about Thrive, the girl who had the no legs, and you, right? You heard all that. You want to hear two more stories, God coming in physical form. So you heard my story about how I met my husband, right? You heard the story about how, about my house. It's like, God, you know what? Let cancer be what you want it to be. Just let me honor you through the process. I promise you, God, I will never say, why me? I promise you. I will keep my eyes on you. I will stake my claim of abstinence to you. Please, please, I want to pay back my faith to you through this journey. And you know what? It was a hell of a journey. It's a hell of a journey. But you know what? Do I look like I've been through a journey? I just got to rock and rock. Okay? So it's like, talk about physical form. This is physical form. Okay? I prayed, right? God, see, God didn't give me cancer. It's just life on life's terms. But God made it okay. He made it okay. Like, if I saw, I'm tired, so it's like, in physical form, I could probably go to bed tonight. Gosh, I should have told this, should have told that. But it's like everything. I mean, tonight, hearing that I need to speak longer, like, oh my God, those poor people, that was my first reaction. I was like, they don't want to hear from, that's crazy, right? And so then I just go, all right, God, what do you want me to talk about? And it's like, hey, irritated sounds good, bitterly disappointed, maybe walking through a 10-step at the end of the evening. You know what? Physical form, look how beautiful you people are to me. God, this is so nice. I don't even feel like I've left home. I just don't see the difference between California and Omaha. I mean, like, I don't get it. I just feel like I'm, like, down the street of my usual meeting. And I don't even know you people, but I know all of you very, very well. Do you guys do 10 steps here? Okay. Does anybody know A, E, I, O, and U? Okay. Got a paper and pen? If you need one, get one.
Anybody need paper?
Okay. On the paper going down, write A, E, I, O, U. And the question is, in case those of you that are new, the tenth step, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And remember I told you about the AA 12 and 12, that it says that it's a spiritual axiom that every time we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us? That's why we do personal inventory, is to kind of go, you know, take, where am I at? Personal inventory. Like, is anything niggling at you? Like, what's going on? You got any flies? You need to get that fly swatter away so they don't rob you of your peace and your serenity. Because when you clear away the daily basis of your 10th step, you don't need to keep doing the steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. You can do all 12 steps and literally live on 10, 11, and 12. Because you're taking your personal inventory every single day. You're seeking through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So if we stay with 10, 11, and 12, it's like you're doing the steps every single day. So, A, I, O, and U is a very simple way to do a 10-step. A, was I abstinent today? So you can go ahead and fill that out. E, how did I treat everyone? I, how did I treat me? I'm going to make a little a reverse of that. I am tired. So let me, okay, first was I abstinence. The second one, E is for exercise. Did I exercise today? I, me. How did I treat me? Did you cancel yourself out? Did you treat yourself snotty and mean? Did you get in a fight with yourself today? Or did you walk up and look in the mirror and go, peace with you today, no fighting, no fighting. Okay, so that's A, E, I, O is you. O is others. How did I treat others? You. What feelings did I uncover? Uncover feelings. Why? What did I do right? Yeah, who? What did I do right? A-E-I-O-U, and sometimes Y, right? It's like, isn't that the little vowels or noun? Yeah. A is abstinence, E is exercise, I is how did I treat me, O is how did I treat others, U is uncover feelings, Y is Yahoo, what did I do right? Okay, and remember, did you get that? So those are good, that's a good little 10th step to write every night, because, you know, it gets tiring to do kind of the same old thing, so that's kind of a new one, you know, easy to do. And you can also do, you know, the 10th step from the big book on page, you know, 86 and 87, where it says when we retire at night, and just answer those questions. How'd you do? Stay in that conscious contact with yourself, with you, and God. Outer you, inner you, and the beingness of you, God. Any other questions? Yes?
Where's your pictures?
Oh, they're back in the room because I thought I was done for the night. But I will bring them in the morning. Will you be here in the morning?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and pass out some of these forms. If you could fill them out for me, it would really help in the recovery of other people as I continue to carry the message of the ABCs of abstinence. And does anybody else have any other questions? Okay, I'm going to give you a few minutes to fill those out. and then I'll be back.
Julie,